You're listening to Lane Powell Live. www.lanepowell.com. It wouldn't be a legal presentation if we didn't include a disclaimer. We want to note that the information provided in this podcast does not and is not intended to constitute legal advice. All information, content, and materials available today are for general informational purposes only. Legislation and regulations are always subject to change, so we recommend that you always check with your legal counsel to ensure that any advice you receive is current. You'll find our full disclaimer at our website, lanepowell.com. Thank you for joining us today.
Welcome to Pacific Northwest Leaders in Aviation. We're excited to have you with us today. My name is Becky Mayers. I practice aviation law at Lane Powell in Seattle, Washington. I was fortunate to have a colleague, Greg Fox, contact me and say, Becky, there's a book I think you should read. I got the book, Hijacked, by Art Kroll. I loved it, and we're super fortunate to have Art with us here today. So, Art, when did you first realize that you wanted to be a pilot?
Probably around graduation from high school. My brother, 10 years my senior, influenced me a lot because he was already in the Air Force and he'd gone through ROTC and I was going to follow along. I made it through all four years at the UW. And I knew that we're coming into their final training issue, and I had to go and fly an airplane. And I was really worried about that because I'm afraid of heights. I get on the roof, and I can't hang on there. I get on a ladder. I'm afraid I'm going to fall. So it took maybe two or three trips before I finally realized that I think this flying will be quite nice. Number one, this is most important, is maintain control. I don't care if I'm driving a car, flying an airplane, driving a boat, or even I'm doing a podcast. Maintain control. Analyze the situation that you're in right now. Then take proper actions. And then land as soon as you can. And I add to that, put the situation behind you now. Vietnam was winding down, thankfully, with all the Vietnam people coming out of the war, I better get out now before this bunch of people come in behind me. And I thought I better get a job while I can. And so Delta Airlines at that time was hiring. So I went to interview with them and I thought, well, they really liked what I'm doing and they're very nice. And I said, yeah, we need you. And so I called Kathy and I said, hey, I think we got a job. And they did say, yes, you got a job, and we'll start flying out of Dallas-Fort Worth. Delta called me and said, okay, 200 of you are going to be reassigned now to various jobs. And it'll work out okay because you'll be trained for a while and different things, and then we'll bring everybody back. It'll be a short time. After about a year of loading bags, they finally said, okay, we're going to call 100 of you back to flying again, finally. And I thought, great. Of course, I looked at the list, and I'm number 101. So, no, I had to walk another 9 months loading bags. But in hindsight, I learned a lot about the L-1011. I mean, it's a brand new, state-of-the-art airplane. And I learned a lot of how to handle with everything with it. And it was a great learning experience because I was hijacked on that same type of airplane. So,
Art, now I'd like to talk to you about a certain day in your life, January 26, 1980. You thought you were on a regular flight, Atlanta to Newark?
We left Dallas at 9 o'clock at night. And that was our beginning of a routine we had. And I went to Atlanta. And then we would go on to Newark. And then usually that would probably be a 2-day trip and just spend a night there at a hotel and then come back the next day. When we got to Atlanta, it was very normal. And again, I always walked around. And when we got in to talk to the gate agent, agent told the captain, and then the captain told the flight attendants that we have an armed guard on board. Well, that was normal, nothing to worry about, but we didn't even know where the cargo it would be left. But he had a gun. So we took off and we're heading towards Newark, and we're all getting ready to take a nap or something, and I get a call from the back, and she said, I got a passenger back here that wants to talk to the captain. And I gave her the normal response is, well, we can talk to him after we land because we'd love to talk to him, but we can't right now. And so, but then she said, no, he has something in his pocket. And we think that he has bigger plans. And so I said, okay, Don, and this was our captain, Don, and then French Denwak is the co-pilot. And I said, Sherry's got something in the back, and that guy has something, we think maybe a hand, his hand is in a pocket indicating that maybe he has a weapon. And so Don told French, said, to go ahead and tell ATC that we might have an incident starting. We don't know anything about it, but we just want you to be aware that we might have something happening. Well, by then she called again. She said he needs to come up there or pretty someone's going to get hurt. And we opened the door and in walked a nice looking man about my age, around 30. And my first thought was, it's not a hijacker. This is a joke. Someone's pulling a joke on us. Don said, my name's Don Vickers, and this is French Denwell, and this is Art Krull, and what do you call you? And he gave us a long Arabic name, but he did say, you can call me Ishmael. And said, okay, Ishmael, what do you want? And he said, we're going to go to Cuba. Well, okay, French, call ATC and get us victors for Cuba. And that's the first time we're telling the ATC that we have a hijacker on board, and we don't know what the plans are, but he is sending us to Cuba. And so we started heading south, and I don't know, maybe 2 minutes into the flight, Don turns to Ishmael and says, do you have a weapon? Because we're not leaving the States unless you have a weapon. And so he pulled out of his pocket a very small handgun, probably 25 caliber. And then the first thing he said was, these are dum-dum bullets, and I put cyanide on each one, and I have a detonator over here and a bomb tied around me, and I can detonate it and kill everybody. Is that bit enough weapon for you? And Don said, that's more than enough. We're going to take you to Cuba. Don't you worry about it. You're in charge of the airplane now, and we're on our way. The first thing I thought was, this is a joke. It's probably not going to be a real hijacking. Then he started describing what the gun was, and he had bomb, and they could load it, and he's going to Cuba. That everything changed then for me. And then I'm back to the maintain control. And all of us in the cockpit and the flight attendants did that extremely well. And okay, well, we're going, and he's got a gun, but we don't want to do anything to anger him. But as we were heading south, we said, you know, we don't have enough fuel. And he said, you will, don't worry about it. So we were going to land in Cuba no matter what. And that was what his plan was. Now it's late night, very, very late night. A lot of people are sleeping, but some passengers are seeing that we're turning around. And somebody came down and said to a flight attendant, said, what's going on? And he said, well, we have a situation back here right now. We'll let you know. Eventually, Don said, we're going to have to tell everybody what's happening and that we have to do the overwater demonstrations and that type of thing. And then Don turned to Ishmael and said, you know, if we have to dish this airplane, some people are going to get hurt or maybe even die. Ishmael looks at Don and he says, we're all going to die anyway. Now, I personally didn't know if he meant as life goes on, or is he planning on ending it that way? When he said we're all going to die anyway, I think everybody in the cockpit said, okay, we're going to do what we can to get there. When we finally touched down, and the Cubans said to turn right, and they had a truck that called a follow me truck, and they followed it to a remote area to park the airplane there. And we were relieved to know that we're alive. We didn't crash, we didn't bitch, but we were down to almost fumes. We didn't know for sure. I got a chance to talk to him. He asked me at that time, do you have any boys? Are you married? And I said, well, I have three boys and I'm married. And do you have any children too? And that was the first time I learned that he had his wife and two daughters with him on the flight. And then he started talking more about, I'm sick and tired of the black treating us this way in America. That the Greenville massacre had just happened. Kennedy had been killed. Dr. King had been killed. A lot of things were going on, and he was just sick and tired of everything that's happening in America. He's going to take an airplane and fly to what he thought was a good place to go, Iran. He knew that Delta was advertising that they could take an L-1011 from America to Europe. And he thought, that's what I'm going to do. I mean, the guy was fairly smart. And he said, I'm going to do that. Well, then we had to convince him that this was not an international version. It is a domestic version. And we can't go that far. We're going to have to refuel someplace. And that became a huge problem. He had no way of solving it. When we landed, and they followed us over on the truck, and they parked us in a remote gate area. The Cubans were walking around the airplane, and I could hear them plug in, and I usually pick up the intercom, and I heard him say, welcome to Cuba, what do you need? And I said, well, I think we're going to need some fuel. Well, how much fuel do you need? And so I turned to Ishmael, thinking that he's about ready to say, I'm out of here. You guys do whatever you want to do. I'm going to stay here in Cuba. And he said, no, we're going to Iran. And then we knew that everything had changed. We couldn't go that far. We'd have to refuel it. We're already tired. And so this was a big change of the situation. So little by little, I could see that he's getting frustrated. Things are not working out. It was going to be easy for him to get a gun and get people to go do things, but we're not going to make it. It's not going to work that way for him.
Then at some point, there was consideration of doing a plane swap, right?
The United States was talking through the Swiss embassy through to the Cubans to say, here's what we might do for you, or we could do this for you. You remember back then, the United States and Cuba didn't like each other at all. So far, the Cubans were excellent. They'd handled everything, and I think they kind of knew that they didn't want to have another international incident going on. The company called and said, we're going to get a DC-8 for you there because that's a long-range airplane, and it gets you all the way to where you want to go, and we'll just fly to Cuba, and we'll switch airplanes, and you can take that and go, and it's all yours. And he said, no, it's going to be full of feds, so that's not going to work. We're not going to allow that at all. That's when the flight attendants came together and said, I think we can evacuate the airplane. We always had one pilot in the cockpit. Ishmael was in charge, as long as we had one pilot in the cockpit with him. So at times they would come and say, Art, you want to take a break now? I'll sit up here. And so I went back. Well, that gave us a chance to make these plans. And Don came to me and he said the flight attendants came up with an idea that they could take the dumbwaiters, elevators, and take them down to the galley service area. We could open the doors down there, and it would take a few minutes to get all that stuff done. And I said, what I'll do is, because we have what's called idiot lights on the airplane, and so if something, a door opens, he's going to know it. Ishmael will see it. Very observing of what was going on. And I pulled those, and he didn't really think anything about it. And so we canceled all of those warning lights so that we could get that done. Then Don and French and I, we knew that the evacuation was going on. And we sat there for I don't know how long, because we didn't know when it was. And we'd look outside, and the Cubans were just doing a great job. They weren't saying anything. There were no emotions about anything. There was nobody leaving. And so we were hoping things were going as we wanted to, but we didn't know. And Ishmael at one time, and we were talking to kids, and you know, they were kind of sobbing and et cetera, and Ishmael kind of looked around and he got nervous, and he got up and he went to the through the cockpit door towards the back, and looking around a little bit, and came back, "You evacuated the airplane." And he said, "What are you talking about?" "You evacuated the airplane. We're getting out of here. We're starting the engine." And he got very angry, and I said, "Okay, let's start the engines." And so we started number two engine, and the Cubans pulled a great big truck in front of us and said, "We're not going anyplace." Now, he's angry. He's got a gun. But basically, I'm beginning to think that he knows that it's over with. He knows that they can't do anything now. So we got that working. So he turns to me and he said, "I want you to go down and talk to some Cubans." And I walked downstairs and I looked underneath the L-1011, and there were three Cubans there in civilian clothes. So I walked over and said, "Anybody speak English?" And he said, "Yes, I do." He said, "The hijacker wants to talk to you." So we started coming back to the front loading ramp, the stairs. And the wife and two kids walked down, and the Cubans came up and very politely walked them away. And then I looked back in the airplane, and there was Ishmael with his hand in his pocket, turning from one for the other. And I kept thinking, don't let it end this way. And then he turned around, went out the front and down the stairs, and the Cubans took him away. So we closed up everything, finally got to go home and landed in Miami. And they said, "Call home," and chucked everybody. And I said, "I'm doing fine. I'm home. We're going home pretty soon." So I went downstairs and we got down there and they had a couple beers already. And I said, "What will we get you?" And "I'll take one of those beers. And do you have any questions?" And I said, "Well, how much money?" They said, "It's $20 million. And I said, "Okay." And then Don turned around and he said, "Well, hell, if I'd known we had that much money, and then we'd have gone south instead of going north." The last time I saw him, they were walking down the steps and they took him away. And I don't know where he went, but we heard that the hijacker, we think, went to Mexico and then worked his way all the way up to the United States, in New York, and that's where his family was. And then he turned himself in. I went to recurrent training, and we went every 6 months. And one of the ones I went to was on terrorism. And I was sitting there watching, and here's Ishmael. They interviewed him, and they said, "Well, what was it like to be hijacked?" And he said that everybody, including the pilots and the flight attendants, everybody very, very professional, very professional. They really handled it extremely well. We felt pretty good to know that had happened that way, and it worked out okay. Well, it's changed my life in many ways. I go over and over, maintain control. That is the most important thing. What is happening? Analyze it, see what actually is happening. Take care of it and then land or put an end to it. I see that on the road all the time, a road rage going on. People pull guns out and they're fighting. And I thought, you know, if you just hang on to what's happening to you right now, and give it a few minutes to think about it and analyze it. In my life, I applied the same thing and I use it over and over and over again, and it's served me well.
Well, it sounds like the experience just reinforced your four rules.
Exactly.
The hijacking ended as well as a hijacking can, with no lives lost.
Nobody got hurt. Yeah.
Every soul safely
exactly
back where it needed to go, which is a miraculous story. Thank you for listening to our podcast today. If you'd like to hear more about Art's story, I highly recommend this book. And Art, thank you so much for taking time out of your
pleasure.
Day.
Thank you.